going over our friends, the internet's number one Fred Olin Ray only podcast. As always, I am Kennedy, and sitting across from me is
Meredith.
All right, and we've done it again. We've tortured ourselves with another Fred Olin Ray family movie. Dear God.
Yeah.
Anyway, what's the name of this movie? What did we watch?
Abner the Invisible Dog, which is a 2013 family comedy.
You know, it's funny because you often say that Fred Olin Ray wants to do a Die Hard. Mm-hmm. And Home Alone does a Die Hard. And in this movie, Fred Olin Ray does a Home Alone.
Oh.
So he's one extra step away from doing a Die Hard here.
Yeah, I remember this in philosophy class in college.
Uh-huh. Where
this is, you know, 25 years ago now. You had the Platonic ideal, and then the representation of that ideal, which was the thing in the world, and then the representation of the thing in the world, which would be you drawing a picture of the thing, and that drawing a picture of the thing was somehow, like, wrong because it's a copy of a copy of of the thing.
I believe this was best described in the rom-com Multiplicity with Michael Keaton and Andy McDowell, where it's a clone of a clone, so that clone was extra dumb. So
perfect. Yes, I should have just watched Multiplicity instead of taking that class on Plato. Like, I'm not even joking. I think it's the perfect summary.
Anyway, how does Abner the Invisible Dog start?
Oh my gosh. All right. So it's 2013, which I remember like vividly because it was Frank and my last year together in Boston before we moved back to Chicago. We're enmeshed in like the recent history. Some things will be different. It might be fun to revisit. Like, let's go to the recent history. And we're immediately introduced to Chad. It's Chad's 13th birthday. Chad was born in the year 2000. Okay, awesome, cool. Chad has a sheepdog named Abner, which barks at a cat. And Chad lives on a suburban street where all the kids walk to school. So he gets out onto the street and there is Sophie, a 12 or 13-year-old girl that he knows from school. Anything to say about these actors now that we've just met them?
Okay, well, we've introduced a lot. So yeah, we don't really get much of an introduction to the title character here. And the dog barks at a cat and that's pretty much it. We're not introduced to their relationship. We're not shown Abner as being important to Chad or anything like that. Chad is an actor named Daniel Zykov who hasn't done much. He was in like a couple of like a Tim and Eric episode. And then Sophie is the crush. She is Molly Lamont. She had a whole thing for the year 2013 where she also played Manny's crush on an episode of Modern Family. And then this movie is her last IMDb credit, so she thought better of trying to be an actor after appearing in this movie.
That's fine. Like, if they both were trying to give, like, acting a go, this age is around the time to decide, like, if you want to be serious about it going forward as a teen and adult or not. And I guess both of them decided not.
And for the most part, I think the actors in this movie either haven't done much and kind of stopped after this movie or are Fred Olin Ray mainstays, with the notable exception of being kind of Ersatz's main villain character, who is also probably equally main character, but we'll get to him later.
Yeah.
Yes. So he's really horny for this girl. And thankfully, they never actually have a kiss or anything in this movie because it's really kind of awkward how in love he is. And like, I don't know.
Well, I think it's really summed up in their first conversation where she's got nothing to say because 13-year-old girls notably never have anything to say. Anyway, she makes some remark about like, oh, the sky's really blue today. It's like a really nice day. And he well actually hers right off the bat.
Actually, the sky's not blue. It's the diffusion of the sunlight. Like, the sky's still blue. You're just saying why it's blue, you dumb dumb.
I don't think in 2013 the term mansplaining had really been used, but he's doing it.
Yeah, it hadn't quite risen to prominence that it has today. And then our main character, Chad. Why would you name a kid Chad anyway? Like, that is a villain name.
It really is.
For the crime of mansplaining, he's immediately surrounded by bullies. I don't even know how many kids there are.
Four kids.
There are four kids. Yeah, like there's two main ones and then like two background ones. Yep. And all I can tell you about the bullies is that one of them is Max Olin Ray, another one of the Ray clan. This is a whole family affair here. I think I saw on his Facebook that that kid is serving in the military right now. The Rays are a big military family, so...
That makes sense.
We also, you know, since we're talking about... It's a Ray family affair. Kimberly Ray, the ex-wife, I think she was still married at the time, as the unit production manager. Christopher Olin Ray is the first assistant director. And then Anthony Ray shows up at the very end. And I will tell you what his job is when we get to that, too.
Oh, my God. Well, all right. This is already a lot more exciting than actually watching the movie.
I mean, it would have to be, right?
The Ray family lore.
Yeah, yeah.
So the boys bully Chad, and he just, you know, has to take it. And the bullies kind of like claim Sophie. They're like, okay, Sophie, we'll walk you to school. And you're like...
And she has no agency because, you know, she's a girl.
It was weird. But I guess like the point is, this is a place where, this is a time and a place where children walk to school in the street. And that is not true today. Like, kids have to be driven or like, you know...
Especially in the suburbs. Nobody walks in the suburbs.
Yeah, it's like everything's like designed for cars, so the school is not within walking distance. It's just like really weird. Anyway, that's beside the point. They walk to school.
But the actual bullying that happens is they literally schoolboy him, where if you don't know that term, it's when one of the bullies gets on all fours behind our victim and the primary bully pushes him over, so he goes ass over tea kettle.
I did not know that term. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, no, that's the schoolboy. It's also a wrestling move that's a similar situation, but done with one person. But yeah,
I have never witnessed that in my life.
It causes the person to fall like really flat on their back and maybe get the wind knocked out of them. But they're not really going to hurt themselves unless they hit their head on something hard. It's prime bullying, man.
Huh?
I thought you grew up in the 80s like me.
I did. But you know what? The bullying that I received was perhaps uniquely crafted to be my own personal hell. Whereas getting pushed over would have hurt me physically, but I would have recovered. Okay, anyway. So we establish these characters and then immediately cut to the top secret government lab.
I could not find a lot of information about this movie, but it kind of looked like the exterior of an aquarium.
Yeah, sort of, like top secret.
Whatever abandoned building they filmed in Northridge.
Yeah.
And then there's an experiment going on with test tubes. And then they were like, okay, well, let's put these test tubes in the secure location, which is basically like an IKEA shelf with some glass doors in the front.
So there's one important character we meet right away, Jackie. Jackie's running the lab.
Jackie is Nancy Sullivan. And if you know Drake and Josh, she's, I think, Drake's mom in that. She came from the Amanda Bynes show like Drake and Josh did. There's a lot of like Nickelodeon, Disney Channel people in this movie, too.
She kind of blended into the background a bit as a contrast to some of the god-awful acting that really stood out in the foreground.
She's probably one of the better actors in this movie.
Maybe the best one.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So we're also introduced to the chief of security. His name is Charlie. He's a doofus. And then a couple of security guards, like folks on the ground who do rounds. Their names are Johnson and Hayes. Okay, so like we know those characters. And then there's one other character that comes up pretty soon, and that is Suspicious Janitor. So who are these folks?
Okay, so the other guys are just kind of like, you know, Fred Olin Ray producers just kind of standing in like that. Charlie, on the other hand, he's almost like one of those like big Italian guys you see in a mob movie that's kind of like the 17th build. Mm-hmm. But then I was like, no, that's not it. And that man is Bob Vance from Vance Refrigeration. If you've ever watched The Office...
Okay, I have not. I watched like the first couple of seasons and I was like, okay, I get it.
Phyllis dates Bob Vance from Vance Refrigeration, who also has office space in the same building as The Office. And he's, you know, that's his one shtick, is he introduces himself by saying Bob Vance, Vance Refrigeration. And that's the one joke they do 100 times on The Office. And it's funny every time.
Is it?
100%. And then, okay. So we have to talk about Old Man Jenkins, because Old Man Jenkins shows up as the janitor. They call him Old Man Jenkins.
Yeah.
Do you ever watch any of, what is it called? I think You Should Leave, the Tim Robinson sketch comedy show?
No.
There is one sketch where he's playing like a pranker, like kind of like a Jackass style sketch prank, where his character is dressing up as an old man to like prank people in a mall, but he's just wearing this awkward rubber face and like he can't move and he looks like a dude in a fake rubber mask and he's wandering around the mall. And eventually he just looks depressed and he's like, I just don't want to do this anymore. And anyway, old man Jenkins looks exactly like that.
Yeah, it's like a Mission Impossible style mask, but like really bad.
Now, I've never requested a TikTok before, but if you could compare and contrast these things, I will see if I can track down the clip for you, because it is spot on. It looks nothing like a human being. Why? And it makes me wonder, like, okay, so it's eventually revealed that old man Jenkins is secretly a robber, and he reveals he like takes off the rubber mask later. But, like, has this dude been wearing a rubber mask the entire time and, like, worked there for months as Old Man Jenkins? Is that what Old Man Jenkins looks like? There's so many unanswered questions in this.
I hadn't thought about that. I thought he just, like, made sure that Old Man Jenkins was calling in sick or something and had otherwise taken his place for the day, because the character that this guy is not capable of murder. But yeah, I did not think about like what's really going on here. And I did think that like the reason that the security guards didn't immediately clock that Old Man Jenkins was not really Old Man Jenkins is because they were only watching him through the closed circuit TV.
So he goes in, he takes the vials while they're distracted. He doesn't know why they're distracted or anything like that. He doesn't do anything. He just kind of goes in, grabs the vials, and then they have a Scooby-Doo style chase. For no reason?
For no reason other than this is a 2013 family comedy, and in comedies, you have to do comedy things.
But we don't know what the vials are yet.
Right.
We don't know who the villain is.
Yeah.
We don't know any of these characters, and we don't know the stakes.
Right.
So, like, there's no tension, like, in order for there to be comedy, and there's no comedy for there to be comedy. It's just like, oh, look, he went in this door and came out that door.
Yes.
Like, there's no joke. There's no joke here.
This one was just eye rolling. And they're like, why are you doing this? And then they realize the whole reason that there's Johnson and Hayes was only for this scene, because they disappear right after.
Yeah. And they fully introduce the one character as Ed Johnson. And I think that's one of Fred Olen Ray's aliases.
I didn't
even bother to look it up because it's such a boring name. It's not a fun Easter egg. So he gets away. He goes immediately to the getaway car, which is just waiting there. Apparently there's no outside security in this place at all.
Right.
And he rips off the rubber mask, but doesn't bother to like get out of the jumpsuit at all.
Right. It says Jenkins on it.
It still says Jenkins, like, at least rip off the patch. Like, what are you doing? And then they have, like, the lowest stakes, lowest energy chase.
It's not even a chase. Charlie and Jackie were already in a car, and as the getaway car, like, leaves, drives at a moderate pace out of the parking lot and onto the road, Charlie and Jackie are just like, let's creep forward also out of the parking lot and immediately lose the getaway car. That's not a chase.
When old man Jenkins rips off his unconvincing rubber mask, it is revealed to be David DeLuise, the biggest star in this movie. The kids know him, and by kids, I mean, you know, people in their early 20s. He was the dad in The Wizards of Waverly Place. But, you know, us people who are older know him as he was a regular on Third Rock from the Sun. He was Bug, one of John Lithgow's students.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's more famous for being Dom DeLuise's kid. Dom DeLuise has a couple of kids. There's David, there's Peter, and I think there's Michael. And one of them is on Gilmore Girls, and one of them is on, you know, Magnum P.I. or one of these, like, hour-long procedurals. And then David DeLuise is the one that always ends up doing these, like, you know, crappy sitcoms and stuff like that. He was on, do you remember the Christina Applegate show, Jesse?
No.
Yeah, it didn't last very long. It was one of those shows that lasted two seasons and had a different premise each season. He was one of her brothers in, I think, season one, and then just not seen in season two, basically. He's a dare I say, a Nepo baby.
There you go. Making money.
But then who's the guy driving the car?
That guy, his name is Kane. His character is a dumb guy who somehow still knows how to operate a motor vehicle.
And knows how to pick locks and stuff, too.
Despite his character being, like, really too dumb to live, that's remarkable.
They don't even try with the lock picking. It's just like, as someone who watches too many of those damn videos, I'm just like, he's not doing anything. He's just standing by the door, and then boom, it's open. Like,
yeah.
Anyway, so that is a guy named Ben Garou, who we've already seen this season.
No.
Okay. I think I, you know, I try to stay positive on this show, but I think mm-hmm. I might hate him.
Oh, really?
Every time he's on in this, I want him to stop.
Okay.
He's like a Big Nate on the Nickelodeon shows and stuff like that. Okay. He does like cartoon voices and stuff like that. But he was also the most annoying character in Christmas in Vermont. Do you remember Cyril?
Yeah, Cyril.
That's Cyril.
Okay.
He's just doing a different. He's just doing a different bit in this.
I mean, okay. I mean, like. All right.
Yeah, no, but he's just not for me. Like, he's always doing too much, and I will have none of it. None of it.
I was listening to a podcast recently where they were interviewing this author, and he said something that was, really good, really succinct, of, you can have bad drama, you can have a bad horror, and people will still consume it, and they'll be like, okay, it's not the greatest things, but, whatever. But if you have bad comedy, it's, the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, he is 100% right. Is that Jason Pargin?
Yeah. Did you just listen to the same podcast I listen to?
No, he's just the only author I know that routinely does podcasts and stuff like that.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So, but this guy, Cyril and Kane, he's doing a bad job. And I think that's what you're reacting to is like.
Yeah. Well, it slowly devolves into them doing just the poorest man's version of Joe Pesci and what's his name from Daniel Stern from Home Alone, which in and of itself is just an imitation of two of the Three Stooges, basically.
Yeah, they were doing it. The Jenkins and Kane were trying to veer into Stooges stuff periodically. And I'm not a Stooges fan. I find that stuff very horrible to watch. It's like nails on a chalkboard to me. And I know a lot of people that find it funny is fine. But every time they slipped into it, I recognized it and I was like, this is the worst.
It's just subpar clowning. And I have a high bar for clowning. You have to, the Marx Brothers were vaudevillians for hundreds of years before they were in movies. And that's what makes it good. You need to, it's very specific. And Fred Olen Ray is not good at filming comedic scenes. That's not his specialty.
Maybe we're speaking too soon because this was a comedic attempt in 2013. He might be much better at it right now.
Filming a movie right now, that
comes out in a year or a few months, and it might be really good.
A Princess for Christmas was the funniest movie I've ever seen. So, a Christmas Princess?
I don't remember.
I don't know. Whatever. There was 100 of them. Anyway, So what goes on? So our very intelligent character,
Kane.
Oh. No, Murdoch. David DeLuise. Yeah. He decides that he is going to go into a toy store to stash the things so he can get changed in the bathroom.
It's dumber than that. So Jackie and Charlie, who lost them immediately, are like, well, pull over. We'll get out of the car and look around. Okay, fine.
They lost their AirPods.
They pull over. They get out of the car. Well, Murdoch, our, faux Jenkins, he's gotten out of the getaway SUV. He says to Kane, ditch this vehicle, get a new vehicle. So he's out of the car. He's in his Jenkins janitor uniform, but his face is totally different. He took the rubber mask off. He doesn't look like he did. He's in the exterior parking lot of a strip mall. He sees Jackie and Charlie. So they have by dumb luck gotten very close to old man Jenkins. But they don't recognize him. He freaks out for no reason.
And, I know all these things happen, and it's a kid's movie, and they happen so the movie can happen, but, just give the vials to Kane, or get changed in the car, or do anything. But instead, he goes into the toy store and hides. For some reason, there's two secret formulas. Sure, why not? And he hides them in a Svengoolie chemistry set. Which, I don't know if that's a real thing or not. I didn't see it, but I'm glad that Svengoolie is getting some representation there. And then he gets changed in the bathroom, and he comes back, and he finds that a newly introduced character is buying the chemistry set for his kid.
Exactly. So. And this guy is Ned. It's Chad's father. And there's this whole bit of Ned forgot that it was Chad's birthday and his wife reminded him. So he's like, oh, I got to get my son a birthday gift because I'm... can't remember the date my firstborn son was born. And you're like, oh, sure, whatever. And then he buys the Svengoolie chemistry set. It's the last one in the store. Murdoch does the whole thing where he's like, I must have that. I will pay you $50. I will pay you $100. I will, you know.
Yeah.
But Ned is like, my son is more important than all of your money, which he forgot Chad's birthday. So it is.
Yeah. Or just take the money and buy something else? Bigger. Like what?
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, only the chemistry set will do.
But then David DeLuise immediately ignores his plan because the agents come in. And even though he doesn't look the same and isn't wearing the same clothes.
Yeah.
He decides to freak out and run away anyway.
It all makes perfect sense. I guess it actually would if we are really supposed to believe that he's an idiot. And yeah. We are supposed to believe that he thinks that he's at risk of being discovered.
But the other guy is supposed to be the bigger idiot. That's the thing. Like, I know they're both idiots, but like one guy is so aggressively dumb that one guy should at least have some semblance. Anyway, I will not test you. So the store clerk here is like, welcome to this toy store. It's so happy. And that's his whole bit. He does that like two or three times in the movie. And that's one of Fred Olin Ray's producers, this guy named Brian Nolan. He produces like some David Dakota stuff. And we've actually seen him in two Christmas movies before.
But no, we haven't.
Because they're in small parts. Yeah, he's one of the workers, I think a character named Kevin, in Christmas in Vermont. And he was a small part in A Prince for Christmas. He was the florist in that.
Okay, so he's always just...
Yeah, he's always just like, he's a producer, he's filler, you know, he's... okay. That's what he does. Do you know Chad's dad? We watched him a couple weeks ago, too.
You know what? Now that you're asking me, I remember formerly describing an actor as kind of like an Al Pacino lookalike, and this guy sort of has Al Pacino eyes, so is that the same guy?
Yeah, so that's Ted Monty, who was in Bad Blood, I think was the name of that movie, the Hatfields and McCoys one.
Oh, he was the sheriff, the deputy dude?
Yeah, he was the government agent that was...
Yeah, I got one!
You got him! And he was so incredibly bad at his job then, and incredibly bad at his job now. So.
Yeah. Do you mean bad at acting, or bad at being a
no,
dad?
No, I think he's fine. Actually... You know, I will defend his performance in this movie because he's like underplaying it a little bit and everybody else is full on Disney Channel acting. So I appreciate like that he doesn't have to do so much. Although I will say he has got to be, what, 15 years older than the actor playing his wife?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's just introduce his mom right away now, too, because his mom, yes. Chad's
Sharon,
mom.
Sharon, I think.
Yeah. She has a very small IMDb profile. She was Miss Ball State University at some point.
Like the jars?
No. Like no? The university, not the ball jars.
I haven't heard of Ball State University. Wait, where is it?
I don't know where colleges are. Who am I?
Oh, okay. Like? All right. Well, I haven't heard of it, but that doesn't mean it's not. That doesn't mean anything, really.
I think she was like, you know, the third runner up for like Miss Ohio or something like that.
Oh, okay, cool.
But I couldn't track down her exact age, but I think that she must have had Chad when she was probably 17 years old, maybe 15. She is not old at all.
Yeah,
there's
you know.
There's a chance that she might be Ned's second wife.
Anyhow, at this point in the movie, we need to be introduced to Murdoch and Kane's boss. Like, why are they doing this? They're idiots. Somebody must have hired them. This somebody conveniently calls them on a cell phone, which I think is kind of like one of those small bricks, like maybe a small Nokia.
Yeah, a lot of flip phones in this movie.
Yeah, yeah. And that kind of comes up later about a phone not working. And I was like, oh, yeah, this kind of... This is about right for 2013 in our mobile phone technology of the time. Anyhow.
Yeah.
The bad guy, his name is Mr. Denning. Classic Fred Olin Ray scene of like, he's in a different room and just on the phone. So I really did not expect to see him in the flesh. I thought it was just going to be like him behind a desk the entire movie.
Oh, no, but you overestimated how famous this actor is. That's what happened there. He's not Buck Rogers famous. He is a guy named David Chokachi.
Okay.
I think that's how you say that. But sure. Anyway, he had his 15 minutes of fame 30 years ago when he was the hunky guy in Baywatch.
Oh, original Baywatch or like...
Yeah. He was Cody in Baywatch. So he was probably in his early 20s then. Yeah, I mean, does anybody... Like, you remember... You don't even remember the characters' names other than... You just remember... There's Mitch, I think, was David Hasselhoff.
Yeah, and Pamela Anderson was somebody.
CJ, I remember, because it was like they would do parodies and call her BJ.
Oh,
that's the level of humor we had in the 90s. So
no, totally. But I mean, I watched Baywatch when it was on. That's why I'm just like, yeah, do I recognize him? Obviously not. Okay, cool. All right. So the Murdoch and Kane take their orders from Mr. Denning, which are like, go get the stolen goods. Like, he wants them. He's like, he's got a buyer lined up, I guess, is his rationale. So Murdoch and Kane are like, okay, we're going to follow Ned home and steal the chemistry set back to get the stolen goods. That makes sense. Sure. Meanwhile, back at the lab, we're learning now about what the stolen vials contain. And to like paint the picture, it's, you can like get these types of vials at a candy store and they've got powdered sugar in them. And just like a little cork and like, two vials that look like that filled with colored liquid. What's in them in the movie is what Jackie calls concealment enhancement chemicals, and that they are priceless national security assets. So it's like stuff to enhance like spy stuff, doing spy games. That's all we get. We're like, oh, spies.
You know, you think you'd have a spy character in this movie to have some sort of fun. There is a fair amount of plot in this movie, but no story whatsoever.
Yeah.
And which I think is part of the problem.
Yeah.
But yeah, like they have a whole scene just to say like what these chemicals are. They don't really tell us what these chemicals are. And then we cut to the next scene. We're really padding out this 90-minute runtime.
So. It really does. I mean, I would have loved to have like some stakes here other than somebody has stolen them and is going to sell them. It's just like, why? Yeah. To whom? Perhaps the Russian government? Like, give me something. But alas.
Something. There's nothing.
All of this, up until now, has been happening in broad daylight. It's a weekday. It's Chad's birthday, but he has gone to school. Now we're back to Chad's home. Still daylight. He's just getting home from school, and Ned is obviously off work. And they go inside. So, like, the family is gathering. They're making dinner. Murdoch and Kane has, like, found a good recognizance spot. They're parked across the street or whatever, watching. And now we get to meet the rest of Chad's family.
Yeah, so we introduce the mom, whose character is nothing. She's barely a wet blanket. Like, she's got nothing going on there. And then we meet Aunt Ida. I think this was her last part, too. She's an actor named Jane Keane, who did a bunch of old sitcoms and stuff like that, like was on an episode of The Love Boat. And I think she's probably most famous for being in Pete's Dragon, which is a movie I never actually watched. So
me neither. But her having a background in sitcoms explains the choices she was making. Like, her character's whole bit is she senile or is she just trolling you? And you never really get an answer.
It just seems like they're laughing at somebody with dementia. It's a non-funny version of the old people from National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, the one aunt who's out of it. And this is just the same thing done less well 23 years later. Yeah, once again, we're ripping off a Christmas movie from over 20 years beforehand. So
that's fine. No, there are no new ideas. You got to rip off something. Okay. Yeah. We also critically meet, more substantially now, Abner, the family dog.
Yeah, the dog is being fed table scraps. That's all we know about the dog.
So it's a normal dog. Great.
It's a normal dog, yeah.
Murdoch and Kane now choose to exit their vehicle and come in and peep through the windows. Aunt Ida sees them. Nobody believes her, blah, blah, blah. It's like played for laughs. It's not funny. That's okay. Now they bring out the birthday cake. So we're like, yay, happy birthday time. Chad makes this such cringeworthy wish for Sophie to like him back, like him back and give him a kiss. And it's just like this dream sequence and she's idealized and it's like all soft filter camera. It's just such cringe.
It's really uncomfortable. Maybe it's better if you're 12, but like as an adult watching this, I'm like, oh god, I hope they don't actually kiss in this fantasy sequence. And thankfully they cut it off ahead of time.
I don't know what 13 year old boys think about, but I'm pretty sure it's not that.
I mostly just thought about the Sega Genesis myself, but who knows,
right?
I was a late bloomer. But why is this kid being bullied? He's perfectly normal looking. He's a little nerdy, but not in any way that is affecting him physically or like socially, right? He's like still fine.
The answer is they needed somebody. That's it. No, like I was that person. There was nothing wrong with me. I wasn't like super awkward. Like,
oh, you don't know what's wrong with you.
But it's like, it's a pecking order. Like, yeah. You just, they need somebody. Okay. That is something that I totally glossed over because I was like, yeah, checks out. You know, he's just, he's the unlucky one. Yeah, yeah, pretty much. Anyway, whatever.
So he gets the world's worth birthday gifts now. He gets a bag of tissues that is demented aunt wrapped up. He gets a pair of pajamas from his mom. And then he gets the chemistry set from his dad. And he's immediately like, can I just peace out and play with this? Even though they specifically highlight that it's made for ages like 8 to 10, too.
Yeah, totally. Totally. But it's of, you know, his interest area because Ned set up it like, oh, yeah, he loves chemistry. Like, we were supposed to intuit by his understanding of why the sky is blue, which I think is really more of a physics question.
That
not
is
a
indeed
chemistry.
More of a physics thing, yeah.
However, Ned doesn't even know that it's Chad's birthday, so of course he would get physics and chemistry mixed up, but it doesn't matter because Chad's like pretty chuffed about it, and he's like immediately rips into it. What's in the kit?
The kit is just a normal chemistry kit with two vials that are completely indistinguishable from everything else because they're probably from the same fucking place. And it seems like we've been describing this movie a long time, and it's like, hey, isn't this movie about an invisible dog? Uh-huh. And you'd be thinking, hey, you think the dog would have done something by now, but you know what? It's hard to wrangle dogs. It's difficult, and they require a trainer, and it's a lot of work. So let's not have the dog do much. He eventually, like, reads the instructions and gives something for the dog to sniff, and the dog drinks it, and that's when the dog does not turn invisible. He gains the ability to speak and read Chinese.
This movie's full of surprises.
Also, he speaks in a British accent.
For reasons.
For no reason. Yeah. But anyway, that's another one of our Christmas movie guests is doing the voice of Abner the Invisible Dog. Is your friend and mine, the king from one of the first season movies, Mark Lindsay Chapman, who I will forever want to call Mark David Chapman. Why go by three names if that's your name? Maybe he doesn't
know.
Actually, no, I take that back. He wasn't the king. He was Jeffrey in Prince for Christmas. I believe you lovingly referred to him as that guy from the Langoliers during
that.
Oh,
the guy from the Langoliers. Yes.
Yeah, the guy from the Langoliers. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. Didn't recognize him in this one. Probably because he was putting on a British accent.
I think he's British.
It sounded fake.
Yeah, it sounds like Luann's penguin voice from Manger Babies in King of the Hill. Like, oh, I'm a proper British penguin.
Cool. Langoliers guy. Got it.
So, so our fake wet bandits are staring through the window, watching him feed the dog the priceless formula and not doing anything. I was like, then he drinks the other one. But first, there's a whole section of fart jokes in between, right?
Like, okay, so the dog can talk. So Chad, being Chad, it's like, Mom, Dad, the dog can talk. And Mom and Dad come in and they're like, why are you lying? And of course, the dog's like, woof, woof.
Yeah, you know, so, Michigan J. Frog, right?
No, like, I don't know. Hello, I don't know.
It's the frog that sings, hello, my baby. Hello, my honey. Hello. And then when everybody else is around, he just goes, Bribbit.
Oh, that's so funny.
So yeah, everything in this movie is from something else. Yeah. And they're like, no, Abner can make noise. And then the dog farts and ha.
Chad gets in trouble because he's making fart jokes.
Because Chad learned how to teach the dog to fart? Like, what?
Anyhow, Chad's in trouble and his parents leave and he's like, Abner, why'd you do that? And Abner's like, what do you think's going to happen if your parents hear me talk? Like, we're not going to be friends anymore. I'm going to be gone. And Chad's like, I guess you're right and much smarter than me. Let's do what you say, Abner.
I will say, though, the effects for the talking dog bits aren't bad. They might be a little clutch cargo, but the dog has such a hairy snoot so that they really just move the bottom jaw up and down the bare minimum.
Yeah.
They kind of do a minimalist approach to it talking, but it looks way less creepy than the over CGI thing that you see all the time now. And at no point does the dog cover his face with his paws and go, which happened in every movie from 2000 to 2008. But yeah, so then there's a little bit more gaga fart jokes, and then the dog, even though he's super smart, decides to drink another secret formula, and that one is the one that turns him invisible. So we finally, like 30 minutes into this movie, got our invisible dog.
And then the dog's not in the, I mean, the character of the dog is in the movie, but then the dog's not in the movie.
Yeah, so like there are many scenes of this movie where we're just cutting to a static shot of nothing with some voiceover.
Amazing.
There are some sub-Bewitched level special effects with some of the invisible stuff, but for the most part, there's just nothing. They shoot nothing.
Yeah.
They have a floating collar for a bit, and they're like, oh, let's take that off.
Right.
We're looking at nothing.
Well, let's get to the next scene. So it's the next day. The dog's invisible. Chad's parents are driving Aunt Ida back to her assisted living facility, so they're out of the picture for the whole day.
Chad lies to stay home alone. Which even one of the characters says home alone, just to, you know,
nail
further
it in, yeah.
throw a lantern on there.
Murdoch and Kane are still peeping around. They still want to, they've switched goals from stealing back the vials, because of course the vials have been consumed. Now they just want to steal the dog, because if they can get the dog, then their boss, Mr. Denning, has assured them that he can reverse engineer it, the formula. So like, okay, great, whatever. We don't need to think too hard about that.
Yeah, although I will say we've actually introduced a little bit of stakes now, because our evil guy from Baywatch will kill the dog in order to get a sample of its blood to reverse engineer the formula.
Yeah, that's just how it has to happen. Like, okay, all right. Chad and Abner start exploring Abner's power of invisibility. Like, what can he do? Well, what he can do is stealthily go after those cats outside, but he gets so excited by the cat that he fluxes in and out of visibility. So basically the dog doesn't have control over it. He's just invisible unless he gets excited by a cat.
Why is that?
It's not explained.
Okay.
But it's important later. Sophie's around. Chad gets distracted.
Yeah, you know how when your weekend you just like to stand around on your front lawn?
Yeah.
That's what all the 13-year-old girls do.
So Chad is distracted by Sophie. Murdoch and Kane are kind of hovering. Abner gets close to Murdoch and Kane and overhears them talking about the plot to kidnap him. So Abner knows that he's in danger now. That's important.
Okay, so perfect screenwriting. While the dog is outside, there's like, wait, let's recap this situation so we know what we're doing. I stole this vial, and then it was stolen by... It's like, oh my God. Oh, have we gotten to the scene where the dog pees on their leg?
This is the scene. So Abner's like, how dare you want to kidnap me? Let me get up as close as possible to you and piss on your leg. And Murdoch doesn't notice.
Yeah. Kane is pointing like, hey, boss, this is happening. I'm actually underdoing that performance. Okay. Oh, my God. Yeah. So we see this gross yellow liquid shoot. It's just somebody having a squirt gun off camera, too. Like, it's not even, like, a special effect. It's just, things are just done in close-up, so you don't see what's actually happening. You just, you can pretend an invisible dog is doing it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what we're doing. We're pretending. Murdoch and Kane have to come up with some new plan to get the dog, because their former plans weren't working. Oh, right, the former plan was, like, steal the vials. Now they have to steal the dog. Mr. Denning gives them a piece of equipment. It's like
it's a cell phone jammer. Yeah. He's like, here, take this. This will help you kidnap the dog. And like, wait, they didn't have any cell phone trouble before. What?
It was so dumb.
A hammer would be better to open the door at this point.
Yeah, pretty much. Chad is home alone with the dog. Murdoch and Kane, they dress up in like cable guy outfits. They cut the phone line in the cable line because it's a bundle.
Yeah, it's a bundle. They're getting bundled. This is the downside. This is what Comcast doesn't tell you about.
Right. And then they immediately ring the doorbell saying, like, we're here to, like, fix the problem. And Chad's like, oh, well, the cable did go out. He's like 13. He should know better.
Because every character in this movie is just tremendously stupid.
But Abner says, don't let them in. These are the guys that want to, like, kidnap me. And also, stranger danger. Abner says, stranger danger. Because Chad hasn't heard about that.
Well, but Abner has. Abner knows, like, references and stuff like that. Right. And then he's like, oh, right, I won't let him in. And then, like, 5 seconds later, he lets them in for some reason? I don't even remember what the justification was.
It was like, sign the work order or something that. And Chad was like, yeah, okay, unlock the door.
What? What? No.
So now Murdoch and Kane are inside. Then commences the first of a couple of different scenes where they do some really difficult acting because an invisible dog is attacking them and they have to act like that. And I felt really bad for them.
Yeah. And, like, this is all just an excuse for just general boobery. Like, this is not funny.
So after some minutes of this, they then take out their cell phone jamming device and then use it, which was just in time for Chad, who, like, ran into a different room to find his dad's spare cell phone because kids at this time don't have their own, which I thought, like, of course not. Of course not. It was made contemporaneously. So, of course, you know, they
would
know.
You're introducing a device to jam cell phones and then introducing a fake reason for the kid to have a cell phone because he's like, oh, yes, my dad has a spare cell phone in this drawer for emergencies. Mm-hmm. I will go get that.
Anyway, so they use it and then Chad is like,
oh, and it shocks them, too. We should note that, too, because that's another excuse for boobery.
Right. I thought it was a taser for a minute, and then that would make more sense for trying to get the dog. But no, it was a cell phone jammer that just delivered a shock to them.
Yeah.
Okay, so Chad cannot call for help. He thinks the cell phone's broken. He is not aware that there's a cell phone jammer. Okay, he's not that bright. He's also 13, and cell phones are new-ish. So that checks out. Because Abner has successfully scared them out of the house, now Murdoch and Kane are back outside trying to get in again. Meanwhile, Chad and Abner need to prepare. So this is where the home aloneing comes into play. And they are preparing things. They are doing chemistry in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Points for keeping a chemistry theme. They make some pepper spray out of hot sauce and peppers and a spray bottle, which that's what pepper spray is. Okay, points for that. Yeah. They also managed to make smoke bombs or stink bombs, which they don't really show in this scene, but are used later. So I assume...
Yeah, whatever. They got a chemistry set. It's fine.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. And then he, like, electrifies the windows and stuff like that. But no, I had watched the newest season of Fargo before that, and one of the characters does that. And I was like, and she does a bunch of Home Alone stuff to protect her house, including like a sledgehammer, except it has, you know, actual results instead of like Home Alone style results. So I was like, oh yeah, he doesn't do any of that. He puts some peppers in a squirt gun and makes a stink bomb. Is that all he does for preparation?
Yeah. Uh huh.
God, that's lazy.
Well, and you've got a genius dog telling you what to do too. Okay. It's fine. Murdoch and Kane pick the lock on the front door. They get in. Chad and Abner throw the stink bombs and they escape to a different room. Sophie is back in play. Sophie has come back. She notices that the front door is wide open. She walks in to investigate. She's like, hello? Is anybody home? Okay, right.
What? No, these people did not take the street smarts course. Oh my God, what's the guy with the handlebar mustache?
I don't know.
Oh my God.
I don't know.
Jen had class with him. He's a part of a whole John Mulaney bit.
No, I have no idea.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah. But no, she shows up immediately just to get kidnapped, right? Like, and not even kidnapped, just held hostage.
Apprehended. For other reasons, Jackie and Charlie are still on the case. They are doing on the ground investigatory work at the toy store.
Yeah, they went back to the toy store.
Yes.
Sure.
And they're like, give us all the sales you made yesterday. Well, like, what'd you sell yesterday? And he sold like one thing and it was the Sven Gulli chemistry set. And they're like, okay, give us the receipt. We're going to like go there. Like, okay.
It was, thankfully it was literally he says, oh, that was the only sale I made yesterday. Oh, and these guys were fighting over it. And they're like, okay, that's good enough for us. We're going to go to that guy's house. Give us your information. And then he does.
Yes. So they go there. They go to the house. They don't go inside. They're outside of the house.
Hold on, though. You forgot the big reveal scene.
Oh, the reveal scene is at the toy store? Because he goes to the house, like, with them.
So the whole thing is Bob Vance from Vance Refrigeration wants his boss to think that he's good at his job.
Yeah.
And then we meet the boss. And the boss is...
Mr. Denning!
Mr. Denning, the guy from Baywatch. Which really just raises more questions than it answers in terms of, like, why is he going through all this to steal the stuff that he readily has access to?
Yes! What's happening?
Why? And no.
Okay, so they are all three of them, Jackie and Charlie, who don't know that their boss, Mr. Denning, has orchestrated the theft. They are all outside of Chad's home. Inside of Chad's home is Chad, Abner, Sophie, Murdoch, and Kane. The drama that's now ensuing is Chad wants to save Sophie. Like, okay, sure, fine. So he is successfully baited out. And then there is another attempt at comedy because now Sophie, it is revealed to her that Abner is talking, super smart, and invisible. She just takes it all in stride.
It's like, oh yeah, by the way, I have an invisible dog. And the dog says, yep, that's me, I'm invisible. And Sophie's like, oh, huh. Like, no, she doesn't even mention that the dog can talk right away. And then I think Chad says, oh yeah, and he can talk. Just a flat line.
Just nothing. Nothing there.
All of the characters except for Chad's family end up in the same location. I was worried that we might actually have another scene outside of this location, but nope, that's just...
Not really. Not really. I mean, we do kind of see the parents dropping off Aunt Ida, but it's a nothing burger.
Yeah, I mean, it happens outside.
Yeah.
I will take a quick note, though. For no reason, they show Aunt Ida being picked up by just this giant beefcake of a man.
Yeah.
And that guy is a guy named Max Aria, who shows up on my Google Chromecast home screen a lot because he is the star of this fake mockbuster movie of Thor. He's in these two Thor movies since Thor is a public domain character, as well as another character in this movie. We didn't even mention her because she's not important. God, I don't even remember. Denning has a bimbo girlfriend in one scene just because, you know, Fred Olin Ray likes that.
Yep.
She is also in one of those fake Thor movies. She's, I think, Freya in the sequel or something like that.
They fit the type for those characters. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
I think I'd rather be watching that than, than this movie. But yeah, so anyway, everybody is at the house now. And then what happens?
All right. So Chad gets to use his pepper spray on Murdoch and Kane. Murdoch and Kane are, again, attacked by the invisible dog Abner. So they have to, like, throw themselves around. Oh my gosh, it's so bad. Meanwhile, Jackie's got infrared binoculars outside because they want to scope out the inside, see how many people are in there. Those binoculars look just like regular binoculars that you spy on your neighbors with.
But we get, like, a shot of the house with, like, the red forms inside, right?
No.
Okay. No, nothing, huh? Get nothing. They give us nothing.
We're told through Jackie's dialogue what's happening. It's whatever.
So Bob Vance gets his magic tool, which is dart guns.
Yeah.
That, you know, shoot tranquilizers enough to knock out a whatever rhinoceros or I can't even remember what he says.
Yeah.
But they're just handguns. Like, they're just prop handguns. They're not even, like, different guns.
Yeah, so they are armed. Murdoch, he's hurt by Abner, and he lets out a yelp of pain that is a meow. So Abner is like, oh, cat, and then briefly becomes visible, which means that Kane is able to see and grab the dog. So now Abner is kind of apprehended in an awkward way, and Kane is awkwardly acting like he's holding a struggling invisible dog.
Okay, but he has the dog in a headlock for a bit, the non-dog. Sure. He's got a fake headlock. And then he's just holding the dog as though he's grabbing it by the collar, even though Abner doesn't have a collar at this point. So I guess he's holding him by the scruff of his...
That's what I assumed.
Yeah, it's just not right. But, I mean, you could have put the collar on him and then dragged the nothing in the collar, but that might have required a little wire in the collar or some sort of, you know, special effect or... God damn, that would have been hard.
So then, all right, so we got three tranquilizer guns on their way in. Jackie and Charlie, they're in the house. They've split up. And so Jackie and Charlie are, like, looking through the house. Mr. Denning comes in, I think, the front door. So he sees the group first. And Murdoch and Kane are about to reveal, like, oh, hey, boss, blah, 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 blah. But Jackie and Charlie have entered the room from elsewhere in the house because, you know, again, they had split up to enter the home. And they both immediately pick a target and shoot and tranquilize Murdoch and Kane before they can do the reveal. So Mr. Denning is the bad guy, but nobody knows. And Murdoch and Kane are immediately unconscious.
Yeah, and then... Denning is like, well, you guys stay here and I will take this dog by myself. And I don't know what his plan is at that point, if he's going to say the dog ran away or what.
No, he's like, I'm from the government. Government, government, government. You want to help the government. You want to help the government. We're just going to run some tests. Abner, come with me.
Yeah, and then Abner says something like, oh, you can always trust the government. You could hear Fred Olin Ray's disgust for the government come through there.
Government.
Government, government, government.
Government.
And once again, we have three characters who are introduced to an invisible talking dog. And yeah. They're just like, yeah, okay, this is happening. Sure.
Everything's fine. Perfectly normal.
This is just a Saturday for us. What are you talking about?
Before Mr. Denning can exit the home with a willing Abner, Jackie and Charlie are looking at the unconscious villains and they see the cell jamming device and they're like, hey, that's a cell jamming device from our office. What's this doing here? And this is like how everything's unraveled.
Yeah.
Mr. Denning like basically folds. He's like, I'm the real bad guy.
Well, they say, like, you were the only one to have access to this. Like, they're not suspicious of each other at all. They're not suspicious of, like, old man Jenkins couldn't have gotten that. They're like, oh, our boss is the bad guy this whole time. Let's get him.
Get him. And then Abner attacks, but he's not visible. So Mr. Denning has to do the acting.
They spray his face with some wet stuff and he's pretending to be licked. The water isn't even moving on his face. It's just like his face is wet. Like,
yeah, he's struggling. Somebody pulls the tie off camera. It's a, okay. All right. Meanwhile, we're almost at the end.
Thank God.
Chad's parents arrive and everything's like wrapped up. So Jackie and Charlie and everybody, they're like, they're gone. That's wrapped up. Everything's fine. Chad's home, holding down the fort. He has cleaned the place just like Kevin from Home Alone cleaned the place. You cannot tell that a struggle happened there. Jackie and Charlie don't stick around to do anything. They take Murdoch and Kane and all their shit and they peace out.
Off screen. They like Abner says, like, oh, well, they just took my spit from the bad guy and that's enough for them to evaluate all of the things that have been done to me. No, I would like to point out that the parents get home and Chad is on the porch with the dog, the invisible dog. But he has solved this problem by throwing a sheet over the dog or a blanket over the dog. And nobody acts like this is weird, even though the shape under the sheet is not dog-shaped. That is a person on all fours. And I watched the credits of this movie, and I saw Anthony Ray is listed as Abner Double. And
oh my
that
God.
Has got to mean I was sitting on all fours with a sheet on my head at the end of this movie because we couldn't get the dog for this last hour and the dog didn't want to be covered with a sheet.
Oh my God.
Okay. So again, another thing possibly for the TikTok, it's a fucking man with a sheet on his head. That is not, it doesn't look anything like a dog. Like it has shoulders. It has human shoulders.
Yeah, Chad explains it away, saying that he gave the dog a bath, and that's why he's currently covered on the porch.
Yeah, you know,
and the parents
are
like, yeah, okay, great.
You give the dog a bath, you throw a blanket over its head, and you sit on the porch with it. That's how it's
That's how I always did it.
And the parents never find out that the dog's invisible, right?
They never do. It's never brought up. They're just like, okay, fine, because the next week, I guess Monday, Chad's going back to school, walking with Abner, who is still invisible. Everything's fine.
Yeah, and that's when Abner gives the recap of like, oh yeah, Jackie's really smart. She knows blah, 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 blah. And then he is, once again, we've come full circle, confronted by bullies. Because he has an invisible dog, he uses the invisible dog to beat the bullies, right?
No.
Because he learned something in the course of this movie, he uses that knowledge to outsmart the bullies, right?
No.
Because he's saved his girlfriend, you know, from a hostage situation, she stands up for him and the bullies leave him alone, right?
No.
Okay, hold on. Something that happened in this movie is going to affect his interaction with the bullies, right?
Nothing on screen.
So now the bullies confront him and Chad punches one in the face? Is that what happens?
He punches one in the face and the other in the gut. And like, okay, I'm not going to like quibble about a young actor not being able to throw a convincing punch on screen. That's not the point. Where in this movie did he get the idea that punching people was the answer?
He doesn't hit the bad guys at all.
Right, exactly. This is out of nowhere. This has come from nowhere. One might argue that throughout the experience, he has gained some sort of self-confidence. Also, very dubious. But even if we go with that, this wasn't the answer. That wasn't any lesson that he was taught. He just does it. And Sophie's like, yay!
She's like, I only hung out with those guys because, you know, they're popular and I was afraid of them. I don't know, man.
You must have blocked this out because she does give Chad a kiss. It's a chaste kiss, but kiss nonetheless.
Doesn't she kiss him on the cheek, though?
Yeah, yeah, very chaste.
Yeah, like, as long as it's not lip-to-lip contact, I'm not going to feel super uncomfortable with this movie.
They hold hands and walk into the sunrise towards school.
Oh, God.
Middle of the road. This no sidewalks. It's the suburbs. Just walk to school in the middle of the street. It's fine. Everything's fine. This is great.
Yeah, this was a lot, man. This was a hard one.
You know, I don't really enjoy the softcore porns that you make me watch, but like, at least there's other stuff going on. This one was particularly hard to watch.
I did actually write something down about the bullies. One of them is Josh and one of them is Kevin. And Josh, he's one of these actors that had played a minor character in The Middle. You know, that sitcom, The Middle, with Patricia Heaton and Neil Flynn and
I never saw it. Never heard of it.
It's a cute little ABC sitcom that ran about 10 years. But he was
shit,
on like
really?
Once. He was on once a year playing a character who showed up once a year. And then Christopher Bones plays Kevin. And if you think this movie is bad, he does a voice on the direct-to-video sequels to Baby Genius. You know Baby Geniuses?
No.
So Baby Geniuses is this terrible movie made by Bob Clark, who's got the weirdest career of all time. He made Black Christmas,
and
he made A Christmas Story, and he made Porky's. The same guy made all those movies.
No shit, really?
Yeah. So he made this later on in his career, and for some reason, there were like a billion sequels, including ones where the babies have superpowers, and it's basically the live action Land Before Time and the number of bad sequels that there are to this thing. That one of the bullies had a regular part voicing one of the important babies, I think. I don't know, in one of those movies. But yeah.
Sure.
But thankfully, good. This movie good. Is good. Done, right?
Yeah, yeah. Are we ready to rate it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, actually, hold on. A couple more quick notes on the cast and crew. So Jen watched this movie for all of 3 minutes before she continued to on her phone and just ignore it. But she was like, why is the cameraman on his knees? This is shot not nearly as well as some of the other movies. It was shot by, Gary Graver is a better cinematographer, I think. And he's dead now, but he did a lot of the older stuff. Theo Angel shot this one. And he also shot Dire Wolf. So we've seen his work a couple of times. I would also like to say that the poster for this movie is highly inaccurate because it is a dog, a kid who is not in the movie, and some brunette teen girl whose face exploded in like a chemistry thing. And I'm like, none of the dog looks like the dog in the movie, but that's about it there. Our friend who we mentioned 15 times an episode for no reason because we don't watch his movies, David Dakota, is listed in the credits of this movie as additional photography.
Photography?
Additional photography. Yeah, it's just a movie credit. Like, it could mean literally anything at this point.
Oh, okay.
So I mentioned that Max Olin Ray was listed as one of the bullies. Like, there's, like, two kids named as, you know, because there's two named bullies and two other bullies. But I paused it because I was like, oh, Max Olin Ray. Let's see, if I can look up his connection. But as I paused it, I read that bullies is spelled B-U-I-L-L-I-E-S. Bullies. So
great. Amazing.
It was the biggest laugh I got out of the movie. And it's not that much of a laugh. So, bullies. No. Not since we misspelled one of the actors' last names in
the credits.
In the credits as this happened like that. All right, let's rate this shit. Let's get out of here.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Effort.
I'm not going to just say one because I don't like the movie. I'm going to say a solid 2.5. Because I have people doing nothing and then people doing entirely too much. And I am looking at you, Ben Guru, a.k.a. Kane, a.k.a. Cyril. You are doing too much. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, David DeLuise is always doing too much, too. But, like, you know, he's the dad in a kid's sitcom. That's what you do.
Yeah. How about production value? The quality of this movie?
everything is in focus and all that stuff. I'm going to say 3.5, though, because they promise everything and deliver us nothing.
Including an invisible dog for, like, the first half of the movie.
We didn't get anything yet, and we got, like, 4 locations. We have basically, like, maybe 2 special effects in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
we have a floating collar for one scene.
Mm-hmm. And then the dog's lips moving.
Oh, yeah, we got the dog's lips moving. That's quality, I will say. That was pretty good. And then we got, I think David DeLuise was dragged across the floor by the dog at one point, and we don't actually, you know, see anybody push it. Like, it's in enough of a medium shot that it looks like they had to actually, you know, attach him to a string or something like that. But literally everything else is like, we're looking at a rug on the floor and someone with their hand on the rug off screen is moving it back and forth a little bit to make it look like there might be a dog there. Like, it's pathetic. I don't like this movie. It is a bad movie.
So what's your rating on entertainment then?
1. Bad comedies are the worst because there's nothing there. God damn. God damn.
And sense making.
I mean, okay. So set aside that there are just 2 things you can drink that turn you invisible and give you the ability to read Chinese.
Yeah.
The villain's plan doesn't make sense. And you could say that about any one of our 3 villains in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, the parents drop, like, spending all day dropping off the aunt and, like, leaving the kid home alone. Why does it take 2 of them to do that?
Right.
Like, why are you leaving this 13? I mean, I guess he's big enough to be left alone, but, like, yeah, no one in this movie acts like a normal human being. Have I given this a number yet, or am I just justifying my low number?
You're justifying your low number. Are you giving it a 1?
I'm giving it a 2. Because once again, the 1 is hamburgers are eating people and people wear shoes on their heads. Like,
sure.
That's the land of Rand McNally.
My God. Okay. I'm glad this one's over.
Yeah.
Next one, we have a bit of surprise.
We do.
You want to introduce the surprise? Or do we want to let it be a surprise? I don't know.
Yeah, let it be a surprise. And then I think, I've got 1 more movie lined up, I think, for this season. And it's going to be actually a little bit different because I think we've hit all the Fred Olen Ray genres of this season that we hit last season. But I think I found a slightly different genre that we have not touched upon yet. It's going to be something else. So.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Okay. As long as it's not another family comedy, I am super excited.
All right. Well, as always, that's been Meredith.
And that's been Kennedy.
And
bye.
God, don't watch this movie. All right, I'm getting stuck. I can't stop. It's not going to happen. J.J. Bittenbinder. J.J. Bittenbinder. You don't know J.J. Bittenbinder?
No, the important thing to note is, the important thing to keep in mind there is Jen went to school on the north side and I went to school on the south side.
Oh, right.
There was they a have different allocation. Like... Yes. Huh. Exactly.
Okay, but she went to a Catholic elementary school. So, I mean, those ones are always poor, right?
The Catholic, the Catholic elementary school in my neighborhood was the wealthy one with a waiting list a mile long. That's why we never got in. My mom did put, I don't know if she put me on the waiting list, but she put my brother and sister who were older on the waiting list and they never got in out of K-8. Mm-hmm.
The one I went to was like, I think the teachers started at like 20 grand a year and it was just kind of just miserable and nobody knew what they were doing, so...
Fair. That's fair. I don't have a good sense for like what salaries in 1980s are worth in today's dollars, just because we've had like such a rapid change in monetary value. And I have not kept up.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Big inflation. Big.
Well, thankfully wages have increased with inflation. So, we have to do all.
Yeah.
Different podcast.
Different podcast. Ooh. Going Over Our Friends was created and produced by us, Michael Kennedy and Meredith Halsey.
Our theme was composed and performed by Justin Nozick. Find more music for him at Bandcamp. Search for The Plague Physicians.
Artwork by Michael Kennedy. Special thanks to everyone who helped make the season possible, including the friends and family who let us watch these movies instead of this year's Academy Award nominees. And thank you for listening.
If you'd like to hear more from us, subscribe to Going Over Our Freds on your favorite podcast app. Follow us on Twitter at Goof Podcast, and find us on Instagram at Going Over Our Freds.
This podcast is for entertainment purposes only. For questions, comments, and complaints, email us at goingoverourfreds@gmail.com.
Thanks.